This is Long Island's own sports radio network. Sports on the Go One Radio.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here.
That's what you've earned here tonight.
Forget about the crowd. It's the size of the school. Their fancy uniforms. And remember what got you here. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners.
On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the f***ing difference between winning and losing.
It's down to the wire with Errol Marks and Speedy Petey.
Oh, Petey.
On the Sports on the Go One Radio Network.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. As you know, this is Down to the Wire. We are live Monday through Wednesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at night. Remember, our number is 631-676-2968 is the number to call. And as you guys know, yes, as you guys know, our website will be up by the end of the week. And how do you go to our website? You go to worldwidesportsradio.com. I got to remember that. Worldwidesportsradio.com. And you could also still go to www.sportsonthego1.com. So you'll be able to link up in both ways to our new website. And as you know, you could follow us on Periscope, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Snapchat. Sports on the Go One. Mr. Speedy Petey, we just saw Gary Brown that was in the studio, ex-Green Bay Packers player, I think he played for Georgia Tech, right? Or Virginia Tech?
I don't remember.
But ex-NFL player, he won a Super Bowl in 96 with the Green Bay Packers with Brett Favre. And it wasn't the last time they won, but it was the second to last time they won because Aaron Rodgers won one as well, I think in 2010.
2010-11.
Yeah, so nice guy, big ring, big Super Bowl ring. So interesting fellow. He really gave you some input of what's going on right now in football, what's going on when he played in the game of football. It's completely transitioned.
Oh, yeah.
And the game is completely transitioned throughout the league. So I want to give a shout-out to all the fans that check out the Third and Long show. If you missed the show, watch the replay of the show. It was very, very interesting by Gary Brown, ex-Green Bay Packer, ex-NFL player. But Speedy, the snow came, it's windy out, and now all of a sudden it's clear and it's beautiful out, and it's supposed to be freezing tonight. It's supposed to go down to 14 degrees.
That's not good.
What do you mean it's not good? Do you not like the cold air?
No, I don't.
That's well, I love it. I love the cold.
Yes, we know.
I'm not wearing a jacket, ladies and gentlemen. As you see, I'm not wearing a jacket. So all the fans out there realizing that I'm not even wearing a T-shirt under this shirt right now. But
you're like my younger brother.
I just like the cold. I like it. I don't like to sweat. I like to go outside, and I like to know that I can go into a warm house or go into a warm car and enjoy myself. But we have a lot of things to talk about. We're going to get into the whole Roger Goodell thing at the end of the show. I do want to play some clips of what Roger Goodell said about the situation with the Saints over the weekend, last weekend, about what happened to the Saints and what happened to the Rams game and why there wasn't a call and how he believed that there was a penalty and it wasn't called and how the league is trying to transition this way where teams could actually argue some calls that weren't called. So we're going to get into that a little bit later. But first things first, we're going to get into some baseball talk. And there are rumors, and I know I was talking to Mikey C yesterday about this, and Bryce Harper is now no longer, everybody was, you know, Vegas is all about where is Bryce Harper going. There was a percentage. They were actually bets on where Bryce Harper is going. There were three teams that were involved with the bets, and now there's no more betting. It's completely off of Vegas. And the reason why I believe that Bryce Harper is right now negotiating a contract, and if you don't know and you have to guess, I'm going to tell you the team where I think he's going, and it seems like it's almost inevitable where he's going, and that's the Philadelphia Phillies. The story was coming out yesterday, and Mike was talking to me about it yesterday, and some writers, baseball writers, are saying that now. Usually everybody was thinking that Manny Machado was going to come off the board before Bryce Harper. Now it seems like it's not Manny Machado. It's Bryce Harper coming off the board, and Manny Machado will be coming off second or maybe even third, because I think when Bryce Harper comes off, I think Kimbrel will sign. I think Moustakas is going to sign. I think all the second-tier guys and Keuchel are going to sign. The second-tier guys are going to sign. I think that Manny Machado might be the last person to sign this offseason when it comes to big-time free agents. So it's an interesting story. Mike was talking to me about it yesterday, and that he is no longer Vegas is not even talking about betting and choosing where he's going, because I think Vegas already knows that he has already made his decision and where he's heading next. It's not going to be the Nationals, so any National fan, Washington National fan, that thinks he's going back to the Washington Nationals, he is not.
That would have happened already if it was.
He is not going back to the Nationals. There were two teams that were bidding for him. I don't know the second team, but I know the Phillies are the other team. And I think the Phillies are going to give him a contract that he is going to like, where it's going to extend him for 10 to 11 years, which will send him to the Philadelphia Phillies with that lineup, that lineup in the NL East. And everybody keeps talking about what the Braves lineup is going to be. But you put Bryce Harper in that young lineup, and he's a young player, that's going to be a fantastic lineup. And they need another pitcher. That's the only thing Philadelphia needs.
And relief pitching, too.
Yeah, but I think they're more in desperate need for that other that third starter. If they can find, and I could see Dallas Keuchel being another guy that they could be interested in. Dallas Keuchel is not going to get $150 million like everybody thought he's going to get. I'm looking at maybe $115, $110, and I could see Philadelphia. They said they were going to spend a lot of money this offseason. They added some players. They made some trades. And if they bring in Bryce Harper and they bring in Dallas Keuchel, they won the free agency market. They really did, because free agency was big this year. Everybody was talking about Machado. This was the free agency market that to go after, because you had Kershaw that was a free agent this year. He decided to sign with the Dodgers before the season's end.
Right.
And then you talk about Keuchel and all these other guys, the Machados of the world, the Bryce Harpers of the world. So it's very, very interesting that Bryce Harper hasn't signed yet. It is what? 25 days, 22 days left of pitchers and batters in spring training. I mean, it's crazy how fast it's gone. Football season's over after this week, and then we're going to be talking about baseball. So it's inevitable what's going to happen and where Bryce Harper is heading. I think he's heading to the Philadelphia Phillies, and it's interesting when you talk about baseball and you talk about the significance of some of these players, like we were talking about the other day, Manny Machado and Bryce Harper are players that are superstar players that really don't become free agents until they're 30 years old. The fact that they're free agents at the age of 26 is really, really rare. Okay,
well, it's just a front office instabilities is why.
It's just a rare situation. The Nationals aren't. There's no instability in the Nationals front office. Bryce Harper decided to wait it out and see who was going to offer him, and he thought the Yankees were going to be interested and make a bid for him. That's where he wanted to go. That's where Machado wanted to go. Everybody thought that the Yankees were going to make a bid. Well, the Yankees have really changed the way they want to go after players. They spent $150 million this offseason, but $150 million off of maybe four or five players, not one player. So it's interesting where the Yankees are heading and where the Yankees are thinking about going. And now these free agents like Moustakas, who might have thought, hey, you know what? They didn't go after Machado. They're not interested in Machado. Maybe they go after me. Instead, they decided to – they're going to stick with Miguel Andujar right now. They brought in Tulowitzki. They brought Lemieux in, where they're bringing players in that can fill in spots that can help them significantly on the defensive side of the ball, because they believe they don't need any offense. So it's very, very interesting where the Yankees are heading and really where the league is going, because the league is completely transitioning different in a different way too. Because if you look at what it was 5 to 10 years ago, you see players, and not even 5 to 10 years ago, 4 years ago, when guys like Giancarlo Stanton gets a $320 million contract. I don't think you're going to see a contract like that ever again.
I think teams are afraid of that because of that contract that they got, and also because of what the Angels did in their offseason when they did Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton and CJ Wilson all at once. And besides Pujols a couple seasons, none of those guys panned out. I think front offices are much more afraid to do that since. Yet even semi-recently, the Padres, when they went on their spending spree, they brought in Kimbrel, they brought in Matt Kemp, they brought in a lot of guys like that, Justin Upton, all the same year, and that didn't work, and then they ended up purging everything after that.
I think, a young man's league.
Right. I think front offices now are more afraid to try to do everything at once, and when it comes to this kind of strategy, it's going to be hard for bigger-name players to get all the money they want, because I don't think front offices want to spend that kind of money all in one area.
I think it's a young man's league. I think organizations are looking at building their team through the draft, trying to bring in young players and trade for young players and get rid of players at the age of 31, 32 because they get old and they're not the same players after 32, 33 years old. Some of them aren't. Some of them are. There are players like JD Martinez and players of that magnitude that are still very, very good players, but a lot of these young players really, after they get into their 30s, and I can name it, but Brett Gardner is how old? 33 years old?
Something like that.
I think he's 33, 32 years old. And if you look at Bryce Harper's 26 years old. He's still controllable. If Bryce Harper signs a 10-year deal, he will be 36 when he is done with that deal. He's still in his he's a little bit off his prime. If he still averages 22, 23 home runs a season, wherever he goes, if he goes to Philadelphia, that ballpark is a hitter's ballpark. Yep. Mm-hmm. That swing fits Philadelphia. Absolutely. Left-handed power fits Philadelphia. So he can hit 40 home runs a season over there. And he's only hit 40 home runs one time in his career, but in Philadelphia, you're going to have the opportunity to have a lot of power in that ballpark.
As a pull hitter, yeah.
And it fits his swing. The question is, now you're looking at the league, the transition of the league, and now Manny Machado's sitting back, and how much is Manny Machado going to lose? That's going to be the question. Now that Bryce Harper, and whatever Bryce Harper is going to get paid, and Bryce Harper could get, I'm going to say Bryce Harper's probably going to get between 260 and 280. That's where I think he's going to end up with. Okay, if he's getting 260, 280, and he's a left-handed pull hitter, and he fits that ballpark, how much do you think Manny Machado is going to get? That's going to be the question.
It depends on how they're going to value everything, because I've always said Manny Machado does more things with his glove, obviously. He can steal bases if you need him to, and he strikes out, I think, a little bit less than Harper does, if I remember correctly. But again, he's a right-handed bat, and a lot of teams are trying to balance out their lineups now. That's how analytics work. You want to be able to not have guys be all right-handers in a row, stuff like that. They try to play matchups, and you try to have hitters that are balanced at everything. And maybe for that reason, teams are more afraid of it than they think. Obviously, the attitude could have something to do with it. So he's going to probably end up making a good $20 million less, unless, again, there's that mystery team that comes in and overpays.
It's very, very interesting. And the question is, what are the Red Sox going to do? And I see a bunch of Red Sox fans right now on my scope. What are the Red Sox going to do with their bullpen? Now, Craig Kimbrel is still out there. They lost their setup man. They lost Joe Kelly. Where are they going with their bullpen? Now, their bullpen right now is skeeved, okay? They don't have the players that they had last year going into. And I understand that they can move one of these pitchers in the bullpen in the playoffs. But how do you know you're going to get into the playoffs with that bullpen? You know baseball has completely transitioned. It's become a bullpen game. Right. That's what it's been.
So they either are going to need the starting depth to come through for them again, because it did work all at the same time.
They had a good bullpen last year.
Yeah, but a lot of that had to do with starters coming out of the bullpen, too. Now, that's something that can also be patchworked within the season. I think if the Red Sox want to,
they don't have a closer right now. Who's going to close for them?
Right now, I don't know, but I'm just saying, closers are one of those things that come out randomly as well, where they can find something in the season. And if it becomes a bigger issue, say they're maybe in third place in June or something like that, then maybe they have to start exploring.
And I see Snug saying Craig Kimbrel. That doesn't mean Craig Kimbrel's going to sign with them.
If Craig Kimbrel wanted to sign there, he would have done it already.
And I'm telling you right now, he wants a lot of money, and I don't think the Red Sox are going to pay him the money he's asking for. He's 30 years old now. He's got a lot of wear and tear on his arm. He's not the same pitcher he was 5 years ago on the Braves. So I beg to differ, and I don't know if you're going to want to pay Craig Kimbrel. There was a lot of pitchers that were available before the Yankees snagged them up that would have fit the Red Sox as far as setup men and possibly closers. And I'll tell you this right now. They had a chance to get Adam Acevedo, and he fit the Red Sox more than the Yankees, and they decided to not overpay Adam Acevedo. And now you see that Adam Acevedo is now a Yankee. And you look at the Yankees bullpen, you could say whatever you want that the Yankees are almost as good as the Red Sox. Right now, with the Yankees bullpen and adding James Paxton and adding the starting pitching that they brought J.A. Happ back, the Yankees have a better pitching staff all around than the Red Sox. And the Yankees lineup is just, maybe they don't hit by average, but they're just as good as the Red Sox. So if you ask me, when you compare both teams going into this season, who is better? It's the Yankees. The Yankees are the better all-around team.
Of course. They have been the better all-around team.
Not last year. Not last year.
Yeah, here's the problem, though. The Red Sox had a lot of overperformers last year. And, again, the Yankees had injury problems that ended up hurting them. So, I mean, it's one of those things where the Yankees are better on paper, but they're going to have to still do the they're going to still have to do the little things that the Red Sox did last year. The big hits, obviously the management's going to have to get a little better. Obviously the decisions with the starting pitchers, and maybe just the creativity of it. Maybe the Red Sox using their starters out of the bullpen was more of a surprise to teams than a lot of people thought. And meanwhile, a formalized bullpen maybe didn't work. So maybe they have to try to reenact those concepts, move those relievers around and see what they could do with it.
It's just very, very interesting how baseball has completely transitioned into a high-paying game where I believe that I think 10 years ago there should have been a salary cap, but I don't think the players' union is going to allow that, and players are not going to allow a salary cap. So what are the GMs going to do? What the GMs and the ownerships are going to do is they're going to start banding together and start taking down the players. And that's why in 3 years when the CBA is up and they're going to have to go on strike, I think it's going to be a long strike. So these players like Manny Machado and Bryce Harper and Keuchel, they want to sign their contract now because in 3 years they might not have a full season. They might not have a season at all, especially the way the game is completely transitioned. These owners do not want to pay these players $300 million. Some of them don't even want to pay them $250 million anymore. And you see all these players and all the transition. When you saw Greinke get the contract that he got with Arizona when they couldn't afford it, when you saw what the Red Sox gave David Price, $206 million, and I didn't believe that he deserved that kind of money and that he was going to put. And I'll tell you this right now, I remember when the Red Sox signed David Price, and I was downstairs at my studio, my old studio in my basement, and I was talking to Mikey C, and I said, me and Mikey had an all-out brawl about this. And Mikey said, this is a good deal because David Price is going to opt out in 4 years because he thinks he's going to get more money. And I said, there is no way in hell David Price is going to opt out of a 7-year contract worth about $30 million a year because he's not even going to be worth anything 4 years from now. And what happened? He opted in. All the Red Sox fans hate David Price. David Price hates Boston, okay? He hates being there. The fans don't like him. They're racist over there.
The fans didn't like him until this year.
Yes.
Right.
So, and he opted into the contract. So I'm going to tell you guys this right now. Mikey, when you say you're 90% always right, you're 90% wrong, okay? And that's all I'm going to say about that. When you look at the whole picture right now, how baseball is transitioning in a different way when it comes to money and paying players and how management is working, now the GMs are really the coaches and the managers are just puppets, okay? This is what the league has transitioned into. It's completely different. And that's why money is going to be scarce, and it's going to be scarce where they're going to distribute money. And the Yankees were very smart this offseason. As much as I wanted Manny Machado, and I know Jeff and Snug are going to say, you wanted Manny Machado. You wanted Manny Machado. Yes, I did. But you want to know something? The Yankees are being very, very smart right now because they just paid 5 players $150 million that are going to make the team a lot better than just one player. So I think it was a good move by Brian Cashman right now. The question is, they might not be done. They might not be done. Manny Machado might be very, very much still in the loom to be a Yankee. And it's crazy to say that, but if Manny Machado is really not getting offered more than $200 million, the Yankees could swoop right in and pay Manny Machado $200 million and get a steal for Manny Machado. So, and I do believe Manny Machado is waiting for the Yankees to make a move.
And do you think the Yankees are maybe weighing the market right now and then trying
I think
to
they are.
Maybe just slightly,
they did this with Mark Teixeira.
Slightly up them or slightly down maybe so Machado could take that slight discount to go there?
It's going to be very, very interesting where the Yankees are going to go with this, if the Yankees are going to make a move like this, because we don't know what Troy Tulowitzki is going to be this year, if he's going to stay healthy. And we know what David Lemieux is. DJ Lemieux, who he is and how good of a defensive player, and he hits by average. He fits what the Yankees want, but right. I'm going to say this over and over again. The Yankees should have went after Daniel Murphy. They made a mistake. And now you're looking at the situation is they really thought that Manny Machado was going to take whatever the Yankees were going to offer him. And right now, Manny Machado is weighing his options. And I still believe Manny Machado wants the Yankees to swoop right in and take him. And could the Yankees do something like that? I do believe the Yankees could do something like that. The question is, are the Yankees willing to spend the money after spending $150 million this offseason on five players? They brought DJ in for 2 years, 3 years. I think it was a two-year deal. And they brought Tulowitzki in for a no-braining one-year, $500,000 contract. And I'll tell you, right. Minor league contract. That was a steal for the Yankees. So even if Tulowitzki could play 40, 50 games and he gets hurt, that was a steal for the Yankees because they're not even paying him any right. money. So. It's interesting. It's very, very interesting on what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And remember, pitchers and catchers are supposed to meet in Florida in 22 days, 20 days, somewhere around that. So it's right around the corner. Baseball starts at mid-April, I think it is, right?
I think it's earlier this year. I think it's starting in March.
March, so there you go, at the end of March. So baseball is right around the corner. So all you baseball fans, you should be very, very excited. But the question is Bryce Harper excited? No. And by the way, before we go to break, because we have to go to break.
Bryce Harper's excited to make money.
Chris Bryant said something 2 weeks ago, which is very, very interesting. He said that the league and the owners should be paying Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. He says it's a catastrophe that Bryce Harper and Manny Machado is not signed yet. And I'm gonna attack Chris Bryant on his understanding of what baseball is gonna turn out to be. Your team wanted to trade you because they don't want to sign you to a big deal. So why is it a catastrophe right now, Chris? You are right where Bryce Harper is and Manny Machado is. You're around a 30 home run hitter. You're around a 270, 280 hitter. And you're hitting about, last year you did terrible. You had like 70 RBIs.
He was also hurt a lot last year.
I'm just saying, he had 70 RBIs. Mm-hmm. He had an off season, and you're expecting money in 2 years. So you're going to have the same situation 2 years from now because ownership is not going to pay you. They're not going to pay you the $250 million contract. Look at what these pitchers are making right now. Clayton Kershaw got an extension. It wasn't a $200 million extension. It wasn't. So all you guys that think that you're going to scram up and you're going to get picked up by a team because you're going to get $200, $250, $300 million, the league is completely transitioned. By the way, that was another thing Mikey said. Mikey said that Bryce Harper, when he signs, he's going to get a bigger cut. He's going to get close to $400 million. Boy, oh
really?
Boy! Yes, he did.
He said this in 2016.
Yes, because he said because he said baseball. These players are making tons and tons of money, and the salary cap is going up and up and up. When you see the pitcher's getting $215 million, Greinke from Arizona, he says in 4 years at the time, 3 years from now, when Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are available, these guys are going to get close to $400 million because of the superstar player that they are. And boy, was he wrong, because they're not even going to break 300.
And here's the other thing too. Even at the time, a lot of people, including me, thought that Giancarlo Stanton's contract wasn't going to be the market. It was going to be the exception more than anything else. And evidently, teams got afraid.
And now you're going to see that there's nobody that's going to even squeak, except maybe Mike Trout, over $330 million. Mike Trout, right, when he becomes available next year, because I think he'll opt out of the contract, Anaheim's going to have to re-up and pay him. He's going to make over $300 million because he's easily the best player in baseball.
Yes.
So he's going to get that money. But he's the only one that's going to get that money. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get into some basketball. This whole Anthony Davis thing is starting to spread like a wildfire in the league. We've been talking about it day in and day out. And by the way, Anthony Davis got fined $50,000 by the league. I have no idea. This has been going on for years, and nobody's been fined $50,000. Why the hell is the NBA fining Anthony Davis?
It's a weird rule.
It makes absolutely no sense. When we come back, we'll get into the conversation. 631-676-2968 is the number. This is Down to the Wire. We'll be back after this.
This is Long Island's own sports radio network. Sports on the Go One Radio. You're listening to Down to the Wire with your host, Errol Marks. Only on Sports on the Go One Radio Network.
631-676-2968. I want to give a shout-out to all the Periscope fans, Talking Snug, Jeff, and all the different people that are going through Periscope talking about Speedy Petey. Speedy is a star, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't know Speedy Petey, he is one heck of our co-host, really, of the show, and a producer. So give a shout-out to Speedy Petey. Anyways, why don't we get into some basketball, Speedy? And this Anthony Davis thing is starting to spiral out of control. And I know a lot of fans out there are thinking that Anthony Davis is going to go to the Lakers, Anthony Davis is going to go to the Knicks, maybe Boston will decide to maybe make a move for Anthony Davis in the offseason. I do not believe 2 weeks from now, when the trade deadline is around the corner, trade deadline is like 3 weeks from now, I do not see Anthony Davis going to any of these organizations. I could see the Pelicans waiting till the offseason and see what they can get, because wherever this lottery draft is going to fall, if the Knicks fall to 4 or 5 and they're supposed to draft at 1 and 2, maybe the Knicks make the move. Maybe they trade the 3rd or 4th pick and possibly KP for somebody like Anthony Davis, if Anthony Davis decides to sign with the Knicks. I have no idea what is going to happen this offseason with Anthony Davis, but I do believe that Anthony Davis will not be playing for another team this season. We have a first caller of the day. Who are we speaking to?
Hello, Errol.
It's Jeff. What's going on, my friend?
How are you?
I'm good, man. Happy New Year, man. Nice hearing from you.
Listen, I realize you're talking Anthony Davis right now, but you've goaded me into this one about the Red Sox.
Yes.
And I just wanted to make a point with you about the Red Sox.
Go ahead.
You're making the case that the Yankees are better on paper, and I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely true. But they were also better on paper last year. And when you went through that lineup last year, it was a murderer's row. But they don't play the games on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And until some of these Yankees prove that they can play in big spots, I don't know if I can believe in the Yankees.
Here's the thing, Jeff. The Yankees fought a lot of injuries last year, and you know this. The Yankees were one of the most injured teams in the major leagues last year. They fought a lot of injury. The fact that they won 100 games with the injuries they've had, they lost Gary Sanchez for almost 2 months, Aaron Judge for almost 2 months. They lost Tanaka for a month. They lost all these significant players that are part of this team and part of the way they were supposed to play. Didi Gregorius wasn't 100% healthy. I mean,
that's not an excuse. The Red Sox lost Chris Sale for 2 months. The Red Sox lost Dustin Pedroia for the season.
Oh, give me a break. Dustin Pedroia hasn't been a player for years. Are you kidding me?
Well, because he's been constantly hurt, and I will agree that
Mookie Betts was hurt. Mookie Betts was practically healthy the whole season. He's their best player. JD Martinez played all season long. He was healthy. Your two best players. The Yankees lost probably their two best players early in the season. Early in the season and late in the season.
But they had him in the playoffs, and guess what?
Hold on 1 second. First of all, Aaron Judge came back 2 weeks before the playoffs. 2 weeks. He played well in the playoffs, but he came back 2 weeks before the playoffs.
You can't say, oh, it's injuries when the guy plays well. He played well.
Jeff, here's the problem with baseball, and I think you know because you watch a lot of baseball, so do I, and we know a little bit about baseball, okay? When you look at where the Red Sox were last year going into the season with their bullpen, and you look at their bullpen right now, it's horrendous. And their bullpen was questionable last year. We were questioning their bullpen last year. Now look at their bullpen. They lost Joe Kelly. They lost. Who knows what's going on with Craig Kimbrell? I do not think he's going back to the Red Sox.
Yeah, he might not, but it's virtually the same bullpen. Minus Joe Kelly and minus Kimbrell, it's the same.
Hold on one second. How is it the same when you lose your closer, who was the best closer, second best closer in the American League, and you're losing one of the best setup mans that you've had in the last couple of years? How?
They still have a guy that can close, that has closed, Matt Barnes. He has closed in the
Are you going to tell me, you're going to sell to me right now, After what the Red Sox, and I understand the Red Sox just won a championship, and they're saying, you know what, this is not going to be a loss year, but if we lose this year, we still won a championship. I'm going to tell you this right now. If you're going to try to sell to the fans that Matt Barnes is going to be your closer, that's who your closer is going to be when you had Craig Kimbrell.
Have Speedy looked up his numbers. His numbers were great.
Yeah, but he wasn't a closer.
Matt Barnes?
He wasn't a closer. He was a seventh inning guy.
He had one bad year, but he has closed before. And I'm glad you brought up the point about, oh, the Red Sox won a championship, which brings me to the next point.
Go ahead.
The Yankees would have gave David Price $30 million a year.
No, they wouldn't have. No, they wouldn't have. No, they wouldn't have. I'm telling you.
If I had told you the Yankees are going to sign him for $30 million and they're going to win a championship, you would go, worth it.
Hey, Jeff, obviously you weren't listening to the show when David Price signed with the Red Sox. I said that was one of the worst signings in Major League history. Ask Mikey C. Ask Mikey C what I said. I did not like it.
You said that.
I did not like it. Even if the Yankees. I would have been pissed off if the Yankees made that move. I would have been pissed off.
I realize he's had his struggles in the playoffs, but how was he in this last playoffs? He was pretty damn awesome.
1 year out of how many years? He was the worst. He was the worst pitcher in Major League history in the playoffs. He's still the worst pitcher in Major League history in the playoffs.
You're the only guy I know of that could crap on a team that just won a World Series.
I'm not crapping on anything. I gave them all the credit in the world. But you want to know something? The Red Sox crapped on the Yankees when they won a World Series when the Yankees had nothing to do with it. The Red Sox fans were saying Yankees suck in the middle of the World Series when the Yankees weren't even in the World Series.
But you want to know what? You're not going to be able to tell me that Aaron Judge didn't provide motivation.
Oh, get out of here. Are you kidding me? Because he had his phone in his hand and he played New York, New York when he passed their locker room?
First of all, it wasn't a phone. He brought one of those portable Bose speakers that was like a suitcase on wheels and was blasting it. It wasn't a cell phone. He purposely brought a giant speaker. And if you're not going to tell me it was motivation, what song did they sing after they beat the Dodgers? New York, New York.
Yeah, and that's good. And when it happens to them this year, when the Yankees knock them out, what are they going to say then? The Yankee fans are not going to be stupid enough to say, Boston sucks. Boston sucks in the World Series. Because Yankee fans don't give a crap about Boston fans. They don't care.
No matter what happens,
Boston will never win 28 World Series, 27 World Series. They're never going to do that. So Yankee fans could sit back and enjoy the show. It's ridiculous. We're sitting here and arguing this. All I'm saying, and all I was saying in that conversation in the monologue that I had in the beginning of the show, Jeff, is really the Red Sox have no bullpen. Their bullpen is not good, okay? It might go down as one of the worst bullpens they've had in the last 5 to 10 years, okay? That's how bad their bullpen is. And if they don't make a move before pitchers and catchers, and they don't get Craig Kimbrell, they're going to be in a lot of damn trouble.
Okay? FYI, Jeff, 3.65 ERA and a 1.26 whip this year for Barnes, 96 strikeouts.
I mean, that's pretty good because he did have like a month stretch there where he was giving up a bunch of runs. He was pretty solid for the most part.
He was a sixth, seventh inning guy. He's not going to...
I mean, I get it, but he can close.
All right, you put him in a closing position. I wish them all the luck in the world. I don't think it's going to work for them. They're going to be looking for a closer, and they're going to look up for a setup man at the trade deadline. If they're still in it. That bullpen...
Yeah, probably, but that's the thing. That's why I don't think they need to be in a hurry to go get Kimbrell or need to be in a hurry to get a reliever, because there will be guys available at the trade deadline.
Yeah, but the problem is with that bullpen, the way their bullpen is really manufactured right now, they might not even be in it by then. Because the Tampa Bay Rays are going to be better this year. They've added Morton. They're a better team, better lineup. And then you look at even the Blue Jays. They have the young players coming up this year. They have a bunch of good young players coming up this year. Who knows where the Red Sox are going to be? And the Yankees are that much better than they were last year.
I mean, it's definitely true that, yeah, the Red Sox might not be in it, but they did bolster their starting rotation, which will help. I think Nathan Eovaldi is a player.
No question that he is. But Nathan Eovaldi, if you look at his record, besides the time that he went to the Yankees, I mean, by the time, actually when he was a Yankee and he had his 14 wins, Nathan Eovaldi is
4.2 something ERA.
Yeah, Nathan Eovaldi's career, he's under 500. He's under 500, and he's not. And the guy's fought shoulder injuries and ligament injuries in his arm for years. And you're going to bet on Nathan Eovaldi. He had a great playoff run. Great. He was great with the Red Sox. But how is he going to. You think he's going to do it again this year? I don't know about that. I don't know.
But if you look at that rotation, Nathan Eovaldi is probably the best fourth starter in the league. He's a fourth starter. You go
Absolutely is. Absolutely is. I agree with you. I'll tell you this. I like Nathan Eovaldi more than I like Porcello, because Porcello had a good year, and he usually has a bad year the next. So I'm not going to bet on Porcello either. And Rodriguez can't stay healthy. So when you look at their pitching staff, they're going to depend on Chris Sale, who, let's be honest, in the second half, he hasn't been good. He hasn't been good, and he's going to be demanding a lot of money next year.
Yeah, he gets worn out. They need to do a better job probably managing innings with Chris Sale, for sure. But, I mean, when you look at that rotation, it's a pretty solid rotation.
It's a good rotation. Is it now better than the Yankees' rotation? Be honest now.
Yes.
It's not. It's not. It really isn't.
Sale. Okay, number one. Let's go number one.
Okay.
Would you rather have Sale or would you rather have Severino? And by the way, the whole time you're crapping on – Chris Sale, did anyone have a worse second half of the year than Louis Severino?
No question. I will say that Sales is better, but not by much. He's better, but he's not by much. Okay? Their second, James Paxton. We'll put James Paxton there. And Porcello, I'm going to take James Paxton. I'm sorry. I'll take James Paxton.
I'll take
James Paxton over David Price. Yeah. Okay? Tanaka and Porcello, I'm taking Tanaka if he's healthy. All right? Then you go to the fourth. Nathan Eovaldi, J.A. Happ. It's kind of like a scratch off. I would. J.A. Happ has
depends
one of,
on stylistically
yes.
with those two.
Right now,
their
right
are about
now,
similar.
If you look at J.A. Happ in the last 5 years, he's been one of the most dominant American League pitchers to Nathan Eovaldi, and he's over 500 pitcher. I'm going to take J.A. Happ. All right, I'm going to take J.A. Happ.
But here's what you're not considering with that matchup, right? Eovaldi kills right-handed hitting.
No question.
Do the Yankees have anything other than a right-handed hitter?
And here's the thing. J.A. Happ kills the Red Sox because of one game this year in the playoffs. Everybody keeps talking. J.A. Happ kills the Red Sox. Kills them. Okay? So
That certainly wasn't the case when he put on the pinch.
One game. One game, buddy. You're talking about one game. Now, he kills the Red Sox. So you can go back and forth with Nathan Eovaldi. If you're going to ask me who has a better pitching staff, and especially the pitchers that they have that can come up, Jonathan Loaisiga and all the players that they have, the Yankees have a better – Montgomery's coming back this year. And CeCe Sabathia is your fifth or sixth guy. I'm going to say the Yankees have a better pitching staff. They do.
You said the same thing for years about Justice Sheffield, and that turned out to be nothing.
Well, we'll see. Well, listen, James Paxton's a better pitcher than Justice Sheffield. I'm sorry, but he is.
No. You were talking bottom of the rotation. James Paxton certainly is a better pitcher than Justice Sheffield. You will get no argument from me there. Right. But when you're talking about bottom of the rotation and they can call guys up, how long were you talking about, oh, my God, Justice Sheffield's coming because he's amazing?
And you want to know something? If he produces in Seattle, I'll be very, very happy for him. But what I was reading about him in the middle of the season is the guy cannot locate his fastball, and that's a problem in major leagues. If you can't locate your fastball, you're not going to pitch in the major league that long.
Right, but this is what I'm saying. You said the same thing about the
Yankees. But we know what Jonathan Loaisiga could do if he stays healthy. He's a good pitcher. He's a good prospect. We saw him in the major leagues before he hurt himself. He's a good pitcher. We saw Montgomery. Montgomery's a good pitcher, too. When healthy, he's a very good lefty.
But think about you can like the only pitcher that you can really say if he's healthy about is Chris Sale, and that's devastating. That's terrible, right?
The only person that I think.
But you can go through the whole Yankees rotation: Tanaka, Sabathia,
right.
Montgomery.
Right.
Every one of those guys are going to go, but if they're healthy.
No question. But if the Yankees stay healthy, what pitching staff do you want? I want the Yankees. The Yankees pitching staff is better. It's just better. 1 through 5, they're a better pitching staff than the Red Sox. Now, last year was the Red Sox. This year with J.A. Happ and James Paxton in that pitching staff, I'm taking the Yankees. And the Yankees bullpen is far and along. Way better than the Red Sox. It's not even a question. The Yankees are going to murder. I'm talking about the pitching.
You say that, and I agree that the Yankees bullpen should be better than the Red Sox.
Way better. Not should be. Way better.
Way better? Did mm-hmm. they do way better in the playoffs?
Now, listen, this is a different pitching staff now. You just added two.
No, it's not. You lost one guy.
First of all, Zach Britton is going to be 100% this year. He came
who
off his Achilles.
He came at the end of the season.
And he pitched very, very well for the Yankees throughout the second half of the season. He's going to be here for a full year. And then you bring in Acevedo in. I mean,
Olivino.
Olivino. I always mess up his name. Olivino in, the Brooklyn native. You talk about a pitching staff. Olivino is a great pitcher coming from Colorado. He's a setup man and a closer for Colorado.
Listen, no disrespect to Olivino because I think he's a fine pitcher. But he's certainly not better than David Robertson, who just left.
I think he is. David Robertson did not. Here's the problem with David Robertson. He looked old.
Major League Baseball would disagree with you based on the based on the contracts that both of them got, who did baseball value more?
Olivino had a horrible year in 2017. That probably had something to do with it.
Based on the contracts, who does baseball value?
All right, that's fine. And we'll see who has a better season. He's going to be a sixth-inning guy.
Right, so is David Robertson.
That guy was an eighth-inning guy and a ninth-inning guy. He's going to move all the way down to the sixth. And they still got Conley. They still have guys.
I have a hard time believing, right? And maybe you do believe this. I have a hard time believing that losing a guy whose nickname was Houdini because he was so amazing at getting out of all of those crazy jams makes you a better team.
All right, we'll see. Because I'm going to tell you right now, this pitching staff is the best pitching staff I've seen the Yankees have in the last 10 years. This is better than Andrew Miller and Betances and Chapman. This is a better all around pitching staff. This is a deadly pitching staff. You got pitchers. You still have Green. You could pitch all the way from the fourth inning to the ninth inning. They have so many good relief pitchers in this bullpen. It's ridiculous. And a lot of these guys could be eighth, seventh, and ninth inning guys on other teams, and they've got six of them. They got six of them. So I don't know, Jeff. I don't know. Got to let you go, Jeff.
All right, buddy.
Nice talking to you, buddy.
Go Red Sox 2018 World Champions. How do you feel about that statement?
All right.
2018 World Champions.
Well, hopefully I can swing you on that with the Yankees, the 2019 champions. So there you go.
League MVP Mookie Betts.
Okay. Congratulations. Does that feel good? Hopefully Aaron Judge can stay healthy the whole season, and he'll win the MVP. So we'll see.
Are you rooting for the Patriots this weekend?
Listen to my picks, my friend. I think you're going to love this. I think you're going to like it.
I mean, listen, the city of Boston, they're a long-suffering franchise. We haven't had a parade in 3
Goodbye.
Months.
Nice. Goodbye, Jeff. Goodbye. Thank you. Jeff, a.k.a. from Tampa, we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up with Anthony Davis, and then we'll get into our picks and what we think about the Super Bowl when we come back. 631-676-2968. This is Down to the Wire. We'll be back after this.
This is Long Island's own sports radio network. Sports on the Go One Radio. You're listening to Down to the Wire with your host, Errol Marks. Only on Sports on the Go One Radio Network.
631-676-2968. I want to give a shout out to the Periscope fans. Jeff and Snug, they're crazy. And whoever the prince is that Jeff?
Matt and I are convinced it might be Jeff's burner account. We don't know.
It's interesting.
We haven't figured it out yet.
It's interesting. It definitely is. As you guys know, we were just getting into Anthony Davis when we got a phone call from Jeff, a.k.a. the Tubbalard, ex-Tubbalard from Tampa. I want to give a shout-out to Jeff over there. Good information. I mean, he went back and forth with me with his Boston Red Sox. And it's interesting with everything that's going on this offseason where the Red Sox are going to go with their bullpen. But back to Anthony Davis, and we're going to get into football in just a few minutes. Back to Anthony Davis. The question in sports is completely transitioning, like I was just saying, with baseball. The same thing right now in basketball. Anthony Davis, all these superstar players are demanding that they want to be traded where they want to go. Okay? And Anthony Davis is still under contract for another year. He becomes a free agent in 2020. And right now, he just told the Pelicans that he wants to be traded. This is the same thing that happened with Carmelo Anthony. I said this when he wanted to be a Knick. He told Denver that he will not, he had a no trade clause. He was not going to waive the no trade clause unless he was traded to the New York Knicks. He wanted to go to New York. Then the Brooklyn Nets tried to move in and tried to raise up the stakes, and they did raise up the stakes.
Weren't they still in New Jersey then, though?
No, they were in Brooklyn.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm 110% okay. positive.
I thought it was 2012 was their first year in Brooklyn.
No, okay. they were, I'm 110% sure they were in Brooklyn.
All right.
This is the same thing happened to Carmelo Anthony. Now you're seeing the game completely transition. You see these players demanding where they want to go. Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving said he does not want to play for Cleveland. You either trade me to these five teams or I'm not going to accept the trade. Mm-hmm. And what happened? He went exactly where he wanted to go. He wanted to go to a big marketplace where he could be the superstar, and that was the Boston Celtics. This is what's going on in professional sports, especially basketball. There are more stars in professional basketball than any other sport. Basketball, right now, is the number one sport on social media. Number one.
Worldwide, yeah.
Number one. And I'm talking about it's even beating soccer. Or whatever, European football. That's how big it is worldwide. And you're looking at all these European players like KP and Doncic, all these guys coming out from Europe. Basketball is transitioning. It's completely transitioning. And that's the problem right now. These players are demanding where they want to head to. Look at DeMarcus Cousins. DeMarcus Cousins took $5 million, and he comes out and he says, well, nobody else offered me $5 million, so I decided to go to Golden State. Now I'm hearing from Mikey C that he might sign a year contract with them for $11 million to stay in Golden State. I beg to differ. If DeMarcus Cousins is 100% healthy and he's playing the way he's playing as well as he's playing right now with Golden State, mm-hmm. he is going to take a huge contract next year because he wants to get paid.
But how much will it be offered to him if that was his market? We don't know.
I still think he's going to make $160, $170 million. I think somebody's going to pay him a lot
over
of money.
What, 5 years, you think?
Yeah, 5 years. He's going to make a lot of money.
It's possible. I don't know if it'll be the whole market.
This guy's one of the best centers, if not the best center in basketball.
I agree with you. He should be making that kind of money. I just am worried.
I don't think anybody should be making that kind of money.
With that market, how is it going to be if they were already skeptical to begin with? I don't know.
It's very, very interesting because when you look at the situation and the state of the NBA, this is also a league that will be on strike in 3 years as well because they have their CBA is up in 3 years as well, and they could be on strike too, especially with the contracts and everything that's going on. This is what's going on in professional sports. These players are making too much money, and they're demanding. They're the GMs. They're the owners of these teams and these organizations. They choose where they want to go. They choose who they want to play with. It's absolutely ridiculous, and that's what's going on with Anthony Davis. He, and everybody knows the story, Anthony Davis bought a house in L.A. He bought a house in L.A. over the offseason, and he then fired his agent, and he went to LeBron James's agent. If you guys don't think there's some kind of entwined thing going on with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, well, then you don't know basketball, and you don't know the way basketball is getting played and these players are playing, these owners. If you don't own the bird rights of these players, like the Knicks own the bird rights of KP. When he becomes he's an unrestricted free agent next year. San Antonio could offer him, and there is rumors that San Antonio is going to offer him a contract. The Knicks can outpay them, outbid them, which means the Knicks own his unrestricted bird rights. He has to be a Knick.
And the extra year, too.
Yes. So all you fans that think that the Knicks are just going to let go of KP because he's just coming off an ACL injury, I think you're sadly mistaken. The Knicks, whoever offers him the max money that they can offer him, the Knicks always have the opportunity to clear everything and overpay for him. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why these players now. I don't understand why Anthony Davis got fined. $50,000 is ridiculous. He got fined. This has been going on for years.
It's a very odd concept with the way that digital communication and social media are now. We see players like do this all the time. They'll post pictures with other players, and whether it's realistic or not, of
doesn't make sense
where they're going. Like that's the way it is. I think the rule of tampering was invented as an older rule before this kind of digital communication thing happened, where in the early stages of free agency and in whatever sport you're talking about, they shouldn't be able to negotiate beforehand. I think it was more invented for that. But now with these players being closer with each other, seeing each other, and just the way social media is now, that's why it's stupid now.
The way I look at it is the same thing with college players. They can't make money if it has nothing. They can't make money off the field. They can't sign jerseys and get paid for it. It makes absolutely no sense. If you're not going to pay these players, and they can absolutely, after their second year, flee and not get their college education. You're not going to pay for their college education because they're going to the NFL. So they signed a letter of intent to play for your college and win you ball games where you're making millions and millions of dollars. But then all of a sudden, if they go out and try to make money to support their families, their kids, because they had kids at the age of 16, 17, you could be fined, and you can absolutely be pushed from a first-round draft pick to a fourth or fifth-round draft pick.
Now, those are your own decisions, though.
But that doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. Same thing with this. This doesn't make any sense. How do you fine somebody $50,000 when this has been going on for years and nobody got fined? This has been going on forever. Just makes no sense. And it pisses me off as a fan by the way the league is trying to transition. I love what Adam is doing for the NBA. I think Adam is the best GM in all of professional sports. I mean, you know what I mean. Commissioner taking over for David Stern. I think he's a great commissioner. He understands how it's going to drive more fans and bring more revenue in for the league. No question, Adam knows what he's doing. But this doesn't make sense. And a lot of this stuff doesn't make sense. I understand that there's so many big superstars in the NBA. And like I said in the beginning of this monologue, basketball players are the biggest stars in professional sports. They are. They're number one. You talk about it. Who's bigger than LeBron James right now in American sports? There is nobody. Even Tom Brady, you name them, none of them, besides Peyton Manning. When Peyton Manning was in the league, Peyton Manning was as big as LeBron James. Peyton Manning's no longer.
In some years, yeah.
No, Peyton Manning
later
was huge.
Later in his career, LeBron was bigger.
No, Peyton Manning was huge, and he's still huge. He's still doing commercials. Peyton Manning's still a known commodity. Everybody in the world knows who Peyton Manning is. And I believe football has taken a hit since Peyton Manning has retired. So I look at LeBron James. He's the biggest superstar in sports. I think that the second biggest superstar in sports is from the NBA as well. Right now, it's not. There's nothing hidden about this. Basketball jerseys sell more than any jersey in professional sports. Basketball sneakers sell more than any sneaker in professional sports.
Mm-hmm. Michael Jordan makes over $1 million a day just on the shoe deals.
So these players are making tons and tons of money, and you're seeing the difference right now of the way that basketball is changing from baseball. We just went from baseball, how the transition of the game, the salaries are going, to basketball, where these players are demanding where they're going, and they're getting overpaid too, because these guys are making $200 million.
It's a player-run league where there's not many good GMs anymore.
$200 million. Steph Curry just got $210 million. Mm-hmm. 210. Guy's 30 years old, 31 years old. He's got bad ankles and bad knees. It makes no sense. This guy's making $40 million a year to shoot a basketball. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It's the way the league is going now, though. Max contracts are everything.
Now we're going to get into some football. And I know a lot of people have been talking about it, and this is our last show before the Super Bowl, and I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of conversations next week when our new brand drops. So right when the Super Bowl is over, our new brand will drop next week. So I'm very excited about that. So all the fans out there are going to see the transition of our network completely change. It's unbelievable. So I'm very excited. I'm sure a lot of the guys here are very excited about that. But looking at this game, and I know a lot of people, I'm not going to make my picks until we make our picks at the last 10 minutes of the show. You can weigh and outweigh certain things about this game that you might not figure out until really the second half of the game. And what do I mean by that? I believe the Rams have enough firepower to compete with the New England Patriots offense. They do. And if they have even remotely a second-tier defense that they've had throughout this season against the Patriots, they can beat them.
Well, yeah, they're going to have to do that with play calling, for one thing, because the middle-of-the-field talent is something that they don't have very well of. But if Wade Phillips can do what he did in Denver and take away the flats, make Brady throw the ball deep, and have that pass rush get there, it could be a very good thing. And like I said yesterday, the Patriots have had issues in the Super Bowl and in other playoff games against interior rush-type teams. The Eagles did it last year. The Giants did it. So you're looking at a case where if they could do that, it's a more direct path to the quarterback, and Brady won't have as much time.
And here's another thing. When you look at the Patriots, if the Patriots run 100 to 150 yards but with their running backs, there's no way the L.A. Rams are going to beat them. Because if they're running the ball and they're controlling the clock, they're going to keep Jared Goff and that offense off the field, which will keep Donald on the field, and Sue and Fowler and Proctor. These guys are going to get tired. They're big guys. They're big, heavy guys. They're 300-and-some-odd-pound guys that like to get out the quarterback. And if you keep them on third and downs, and they keep scoring or getting third downs to four, you know, and Bill Belichick, it could go on fourth down a couple of times in this game. And I do believe that if it's like fourth and two, you're going to see Bill Belichick go for it. We've seen it.
McVay too. Look at all the fake punts they were doing all postseason long.
It's crazy. I think that this game is going to be, everybody thinks it's going to be a high offense octane game. I do not believe that.
I agree with you.
When
we do our picks, I'll explain why a little more. But yeah, I actually do agree with you. And remember last year, a lot of people, including me, thought it was going to be a low scoring game and it turned into a high scoring game.
Game planning matters. I think this is going to be a low scoring game. I think it's going to be up to the field goal kickers to win the game. And we saw the Patriots in their first two Super Bowl wins. It was all up to Adam Vinatieri to win the game. And I think that this particular game, it's going to be left to the field goal kickers. Whoever's the better field goal kicker who's going to kick their way to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl championship for their team is what's going to – it's going to really – I think a defensive player will win the MVP in this
really?
Game.
Really?
Yes. I think a defensive player will be the MVP, either a defensive player or a running back. That's what I think. It's either James White, Sonny Michel, or Gurley, or C.J. Anderson. And it would be so funny if C.J. Anderson wins the MVP. It really would. Because this guy, nobody wanted. They brought him from the scraps. This guy went from, I think he gained 50 pounds as a running back. He completely dominated against the Cowboys. And everybody was like, who the hell is C.J. Anderson? Meanwhile, this guy was a great back in the league a couple of years ago. And now all of a sudden he shows up, he dominates the game against the Cowboys, and he might play a big dividend and big part of how they're going to beat the New England Patriots at the Super Bowl. It would be so fitting, because you saw Nick Foles be the MVP last year, a backup quarterback. It would be so fitting that a backup's running back wins the MVP of the Super Bowl.
It's interesting because you're going to see the Patriots try to stuff the middle a lot. That's the way their defense has always operated. Top linebacker talents. Obviously, they have Vince Wilfork for a while and their safety play. So usually if you're going to win against the Patriots, you're going to have to do it on the outside. But don't be surprised if they utilize Anderson to potentially wear out somebody like Trey Flowers and make them have to blitz. And that'll be interesting, too, in the way they use him. I think they will end up using him. I mentioned it when we were debating who would have more yards with Gurley and Gronk, that don't be surprised if Anderson takes away carries from Gurley from a game plan perspective if the outside game doesn't work.
It's also Tom Brady. If Tom Brady's going to be able to stay in the pocket and let go of the ball, and I believe Tom Brady, he sees himself to be very, very cocky going into this game. After all the stuff that we've heard, everybody was against us, blah, 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 blah. We are still here. We're still here. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to the game, and the young L.A. Rams have nothing to lose. They really have nothing to lose. And they have a chance. They went from the wild card game last year, getting knocked out of the wild card game, Now all of a sudden, their second year, Sean McVay's second year at the age of 32 to a Super Bowl. This team is still very, very young and still has a chance to be in a couple of Super Bowls in the near future. They were not expected to go to the Super Bowl this year. I'm sorry. I don't care if they were the second best team in the NFC, and nobody would have thought that the Rams were going to make it to the Super Bowl. I didn't think it. I didn't think it in the beginning of the season how good they were playing. I just didn't think they had enough defensively in the secondary.
Well, talent-wise, you knew they improved in the key areas.
They're more talented than the Patriots. There's no question.
Well, I'm talking about more talent. I'm talking about the defense. The Rams' defense looked more talented than it was last year on paper, and they improved in more key areas. Last year, they had a good front seven, and their secondary, besides Tremaine Johnson, was nothing special. And again, the way it was constructed, they were ended up being very vulnerable. This year, statistically, they dropped off defensively by sacrificing some linebackers, which they even did before McVay got there, and bringing in older corners that just didn't work. But again, they've stepped up in the playoffs in game plan moments. They game planned well last week for Michael Thomas. They game planned well the week before for Zeke and then Amari Cooper after he got the touchdown. So at least they have those kinds of players and they have a good knowledge of what they're doing. And that's where I think the Rams are ending up benefiting. And Tlaib has had good success against the Patriots, which could end up helping them.
I think Tlaib is going to play a big part in this game because he's going to have to stop the guy that always is the blanket of the New England Patriots. And you guys know who he is, and that's Edelman. Edelman is going to play a big part in this game in the slants. And Tlaib is going to be hurt. Right now he's going into this game hurt. He's not 100%. He hasn't been 100% all season long. He was a big reason why they're here. He is a big reason why they're here. And I don't trust Peters, and I don't trust Hill. I like Joyner. You were talking about Joyner. He's a big part of their secondary. He's going to have to play a big part in this secondary if they have any chance of stopping guys like Gronk from going after, you know, going for these short passes.
And he's not
going to
be alone,
him down
because he's not big enough.
I know. But have to Joyner's very strong.
Gronk is even stronger.
I don't think Gronk is going to catch that many catches in this game. I think he's a decoy in this game.
If the Rams bracket Gronk well, like we saw Jacksonville do early in the season, when they beat him, we saw Detroit do early in the season. If they could do something like that, yes, maybe they can stop Gronk. But one-on-one on your own, there's not going to be much of a shot considering it's a
nobody said they were going to do one-on-one.
Right.
I think they're going to take out Gronk and make the other guys beat him. And I think they're going to try to bring up five guys. They're going to try to bring up five guys to try to get to Tom Brady. That's what they're going to do. They're going to put a load of pressure. They're not bringing up four. If you remember the Broncos, how the Broncos beat the Patriots, what were they bringing up? They were bringing up five guys. Von Miller on the edge, Wolf, DeMarcus Ware, and then the other two guys. I forget the other two guys. The two linebackers. Trevathan and...
Well, Trevathan was more coverage.
Yeah, but Trevathan was blitzing.
Brandon Marshall.
Those five guys were going after Tom Brady in the AFC title game, if you guys don't remember. He was bringing up five guys, rushing five guys, and bringing up Von Miller. He was doing that spin-over tactic, and he got to Tom Brady at will. If they can do that, and they're an interior team. The Rams are an interior team. They get to the quarterback interior. That's how you beat them. That's how the Giants beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Interiorly
and power
went.
Rushing.
Yeah, right. Well, and they have both. They have both. They're the best interior blitz team in football. And they have arguably one of the best rushing teams in football as well. They have the stakes to beat the New England Patriots. Now the question is, are they going to completely dominate those stakes? Or are the Patriots going to come out? Because right now, if you look at the Patriots' Super Bowl wins, they have never defeated a team by more than 6 points.
Right.
Never.
Which is why I think you're still going to have a game that ends up being very close. It might be more tale of two halves kind of game, but yeah, you've never seen the Patriots completely dominate. Even teams that they've played well in the past, they haven't been able to dominate the same way in the Super Bowl. So you see these coaches will still try to take away Patriots' tendencies. The Patriots switch things up a lot, but they still have their own tendencies. And I think while Gronk probably is the name to take away in normally, don't be surprised if the Rams try to emphasize taking away someone like James White first.
And these are the two secret players before we make our picks that you guys are going to watch on Sunday for two teams. I'm going to tell you guys this right now. It's not the superstars. It's not the superstars. It is not. The guy to watch on the Rams in this particular game, and I've said this, and I'm going to say it again, C.J. Anderson. I'm telling you right now, nobody expects it. Gurley, I do believe Gurley's healthy, but they're going to give him an extra dose of C.J. Anderson. He understands how to beat the Patriots. He's beaten the Patriots with the Broncos. He's won a Super Bowl with the Broncos. He knows how to beat upside the middle. They're power back. He's a power back. And the Patriots, what did they have problems with all season long until the end of the season? Stopping power backs. And I think C.J. Anderson is going to be a guy that's going to cause a lot of havoc down the middle. C.J. Anderson is my secret guy that can be a Super Bowl MVP. And on the Patriots side, I'm going to say this over and over again because it seems like it just never ends. They have so many weapons because Tom Brady uses. Remember this name, Chris Hogan. I'm going to say that again, Chris Hogan, because I believe that they're going to take Edelman out and they're going to find a way to keep Gronk away from the ball. They're going to need to use somebody to open up the field and open up their running game, and I believe it's going to be Chris Hogan. I think he's going to be the guy that is going to surprise. He's going to have like 9 or 10 catches in the game, and he's going to have 100 yards in the game, and I believe he's going to be one of the reasons why they win a Super Bowl. Remember that. So,
very interesting.
Ready?
Here we go.
We're going to do our picks.
Here we go. All right, so we've hyped up that we're both picking kind of lower scoring games, and I'm going to agree with you. I actually think this will be a lower scoring game. Last year was supposed to be a low scoring game, turned into a high scoring game. Here's why I think it'll be a low scoring game. The Rams have trouble, or the Rams have small receivers. As good as they are, they have small receivers, and I always say the Patriots have done well for the most part against small receivers. I actually think they'll be able to run the ball well. I think the Rams will end up setting the tone early in this game with their run game, like you were saying, with Anderson and possibly with Gurley. But I just worried about how much they're going to be able to pass. Jared Goff has not been good against the blitz. The Saints backed off on the blitz after, and the Rams ended up coming back and winning despite the controversy. Here's the thing, though. I think the Patriots running game will be great in this game, too. I think you're going to see them use Sony Michel more up the middle to wear out the pass rush. I think you're going to see guys like Rex Burkhead even run the ball up the middle as well. And don't be surprised if James Devlin ends up making an impact too. I think the Rams will set the tone early, but here's the thing. Again, I don't think that these receivers are going to do great. And the Patriots do like to blitz a lot more than we've seen in the past, and they're going to be able to press all these guys at the line of scrimmage. And I think it's going to be very hard, especially for Brandon Cooks, who the Patriots know well, having played there last year. And that's where I think Jared Goff is going to struggle. And then I think after the first quarter, because I think the Rams will dominate the first quarter, I think you're going to see the Patriots start to figure them out. I just think they have too much in terms of over the middle. The Rams can only game plan so much over the middle, and the problem with the Rams in the second half of games, they played a lot of zones, and that's where I get concerned with them, because the Patriots, even though they have struggled against pass-rushing defensive lines in the past, power-rusher teams, they're going to be able to game plan for Aaron Donald. They're going to be able to game plan for Sue at different times. And how will the Rams adjust will be the question. I don't know if they have the linebacker talent. And that's where I think you're going to see somebody like Gronk come in. And, again, Rex Burkhead is another guy that I think will end up having an impact, because I do think the Rams will take away White. The Rams can win this game, but I still think the Patriots just have too much. And I think the Patriots' second half will end up making a difference in this game, because I just don't know if the Rams have enough receivers. And once the Patriots start to key in on Gurley, I think it's going to be very hard. So I'm going to take New England in a very close late game. I do agree with you. There's going to be a lot of field goals between the two teams. I'm going to still take New England with the way that I just think their defense has been very impressive, and Jared Goff is not good against the blitz. Fundamentally sound defensive game. New England Patriots win it 23-17.
It's going to be an interesting game, and I think the offensive lines are going to play a big part in the game. Both offensive lines are very, very good offensive lines. This is why I think the game is going to be close. I think both teams have very good running games, and I do believe that right now the Patriots with Sonny Michel and James White, they're going to be used in the flats. They're going to be used to, like they always do. Tom Brady's going to throw these short passes, and they're going to be running the ball very, very, very much in this game. And we know that over the last couple of weeks, and really throughout the season, the Rams had problems stopping outside backs. So this is going to be a problem against Sonny Michel and James White. I think James White is going to be the bigger back in this game. He's going to be making more of the plays than Sonny Michel. I think they're going to find a way to stop Sonny Michel down the middle. He's not going to be able to rush the ball. They're going to have to use the backs on the outside to beat the defensive line of the Rams. I also say the same thing about the Rams. I think the Rams will be able to run the ball. They're not going to be able to throw the ball as well in this game because they have a rookie quarterback. And I believe that you know that Bill Belichick is going to try to put pressure on a young quarterback to make plays early in the game. And if he doesn't, he's going to have a bad game. He's going to have a running game. He's going to have to run the ball very, very well. I think they're going to be able to run the ball, and they're going to run it much better than the Patriots. Here's the problem on both teams. I do not think the Patriots' defense is very, very good. Their secondary is better than a front seven. Their front seven played very, very well the last couple of weeks. I don't trust them, okay? I don't trust them. And that offensive line of the Rams is very, very good. Over there with Whitworth and the way they've played the last couple of weeks, especially against the Cowboys, that was a better defense, a way better defense than the Patriots, and they dominated the Cowboys. Then they played in the second half. What they did to the Saints defense, arguably one of the best defenses in football, they stopped them in the second half. That's the difference right now. I think the Rams' offensive line could absolutely stop the Patriots' defensive line. They don't put pressure on Jared Goff. Jared Goff is going to be able to make plays with the running backs, hitch passes. They're going to be short passes, and that's why I think he's going to cause trouble on the outside. Now, as far as the Rams are concerned, I don't like the Rams in a lot of ways defensively in their secondary. I don't like their secondary. I said it. I don't like Hill. I don't like Peters. And I don't really like the linebackers. We talked about this over and over again. Who is going to really defend the middle of the field? That's going to be the question. Talib can't be everywhere. And Talib isn't 100%. That's going to be the question on where the Patriots are going to go and how are they going to throw the ball and who they're going to throw the ball to. I think Chris Hogan's going to play a big part in this game if the Patriots want to win this game. So I think the problem defensively will be the secondary of the Rams. Now, going into this game, I think it's going to be all about the kickers. I think it's all about the kickers. Greg the Leg, and a guy that has won Super Bowls and has been a part of the organization for almost 10 years and is one of the winningest kickers of all time. The problem is, I would bet more on Greg the Leg if there's a 50-yard kick at the end of the game than I would bet on Hoskins, whatever his name is. The kicker for the Patriots.
Oh, Gostkowski.
Gostkowski.
Yeah. He struggled in the last two Super Bowls.
Yes.
Though.
I would trust Greg the Leg more than Gostkowski. So if it's up to me and the kickers and the special teams, I'm going to go with the Rams. The Rams are more talented all around as far as special teams is concerned. Yes, they have players, and we've talked about Slater. They have guys that have been. Slater's old. That special teams has really taken a step back the last couple of years. So I think they win in the special teams area. So when you look at the whole game, the outlook of the game, it's really who's going to make the play at the end of the game and who's going to get the last points at the end of the game. Most people will bet on Brady. I think the running game is going to be able to dominate the game, and Gurley and C.J. Anderson is going to be able to dominate the game. It's going to be very, very close. I could see the game a two-point win. I think I could see a safety in this game. All right, I could see that. I'm going to pick the Rams in this game. I went back and forth. I was actually going to take the Patriots, but then I'm looking at it and I see how confident the Patriots are. And whenever the Patriots are confident and cocky, something bad happens. They were cocky last year. They were confident last year that they were that much better than the Eagles. And the Eagles came and they showed everybody.
Well, the Eagles had that underdog mentality all year.
Yes, and I know, Jeff, I know they're 50-1, not 60-1. 50-1. If any of their running backs get over 100 or more yards, absolutely.
Which I think will be the case.
I think they're going to be able to stop the running game of the Patriots. I think they're not going to be able to stop the throwing of the Patriots. I don't think they're going to be able to stop the middle of the field. That's what scares me in this game for the Rams against the Patriots. I don't think they're going to be able to stop Tom Brady in the middle of the field if they can't get to him. And this could be a blowout game. But if they stop the running game and they defend Gronk, and they take Gronk and Edelman out of the game, and Chris Hogan's the only guy that can really dominate the game, or one of these other wide receivers are the ones that have to make the plays, I will bet on the Rams. I'm going to pick the Rams in this game. It's going to be very, very close. I'm going to take the Rams 24-23.
Wow, 1-point Super Bowl. Now, what is your pick for MVP? You have hinted at a defensive MVP. Are you going to stick with that?
I'm going to go with a defensive MVP. I think a defensive player will win the MVP in this game. And I'm going to take Fowler.
You are sticking with Dante Fowler.
I think Dante Fowler will make a lot of money next offseason because he's going to be the guy. He was going to be the steal at the trade deadline. They gave up a third and a sixth or a third and a fifth. And I think it was a good deal. Right. And I think Fowler will be the MVP.
I have the Patriots winning, and I think the MVP, it could be a defensive MVP because I think it's a low-scoring game, but I don't think it's going to be a flashy defensive game. I'm going to take Sony Michel as my MVP. I really think you're going to see him do better.
I think if the Patriots win, it's Tom Brady.
I think I actually think they're going to try to take away a lot of the flats, and because of that, somebody like Sony Michel is going to end up making a difference. They've run a lot on first down. You've seen Sony Michel set the tones in the games, and like I said, I think you're going to see the Rams go up early, so it might be hard for them to run, but I think the Patriots are still going to set the tone that way, and when the Rams get too conservative, you're going to get to see him get a lot of chunk plays. I think you're going to see him more in the receiving end, too, as a trick, and I wouldn't be surprised if he had close to 150 scrimmage yards in this game, because I think they're going to try to do that to wear out that pass rush, and I think he'll do very well. So my pick is Sony Michel for MVP.
If the Patriots win, it's Tom Brady. I'm going to say that. If the Patriots win, it will be Tom Brady. If the Rams win, it's Fowler.
Dante Fowler, huh?
Yep. And I think he's going to make a lot of money in the offseason. I really do. If he has an MVP, a Super Bowl MVP, especially what he did with the Rams, and he left the Jaguars, and I think he's going to... He's been fantastic throughout the playoffs already. So he's proved to everybody that he can still play, and he can make a lot of money. I think a team is going to pay him. So that's it. That's it for our show. We will be back on Monday. The drop of the rebrand of Worldwide Sports Radio Network. I'm looking forward to it. You guys are going to see the new changes. In the next couple of weeks, you're going to see on Periscope everything everybody sees on Facebook and YouTube. We're going to have cameras. You're going to be able to talk to us, but you're going to see the graphics. You're going to see everything that everybody sees in the studio. So just wait, guys. All the fans that follow us and see us on Periscope, it's going to be more interesting to watch on Periscope what everybody sees on Facebook and YouTube. It's all going to be transcending. So I think you guys are going to really, really love what we're doing with the station over here, the new backdrops, everything. I think you guys are going to really love it. So stay tuned for that. Tell your friends about us. And like I always said, tell your friends. So... Tell your friends. Remember that, Snug? When I said tell your friends at the end of the show? So that's it. Will Speedy wear a dress every day? No.
No.
No, he won't. But you know who's supposed to wear a dress? There is somebody that's supposed to wear a dress.
It's not me, though, thankfully.
No. And his name is Tyler Harrison. Tyler Harrison
is
supposed
to wear a dress.
Because he lost a bet with Mr. Beef. So,
oh, he did, huh?
Yes, so we have to get him a dress and a wig, and he will be wearing it. So don't worry, Snug. There will be somebody wearing a dress and a wig. So it's going to be very, very interesting. And we're going to get a picture of that on the wall, definitely here in the studio. So that's it for our show. Up next, the home stretch with the Gweedster and the Mothball. Until next week and Monday in our new drop on rebrand of Worldwide Sports Radio Network, this is Errol Marks, Speedy Petey, saying good night. We'll talk to you then. Good night, everybody.
This is Long Island's own sports radio network. Sports on the Go One Radio.